Yeah, let's do it. Let's drop it. Panel, Jake Uger, what is this? Anna Kasparian on a power panel, hasn't happened in a long time, and then Adrian Lawrence on top. Now, come on, is it going to get any better than this? Probably not. Looking at as good as it gets.
Would a hero book a panel this good?
Adrian, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. All right, guys, look, this show has amazing stories. You stumbled onto a ridiculous show, okay? So the Bill Burr story in this hour, along with everything else, is amazing. In the second hour, Trump's trying to coup Tucker Carlson, turns out hates him. It's filled with drama, filled with fun. But you know, members, your lucky day. Out of all these amazing stories, the best one's probably in the bonus episode. They've started arresting people for smiling at cops, okay? It's amazing, it's an amazing story and it's real. So anyways, tons to get to, so let's get to it. Casper, go.
Let's do it, let's get to it. Let's begin by discussing how stimulus money is going towards subsidizing rich people and their tax cuts. So. Republicans who want to use the pandemic relief funds from the Joe Biden coronavirus relief bill to subsidize tax cuts for the rich look like they'll be able to do so, even though there were supposed to be safeguards in place to prevent this from happening. Now, the Treasury Department under the Biden administration has essentially indicated that they will not enforce some of the rules pertaining to how that state funding can be spent, which basically opens this pathway for these Republican state legislatures to use some of that funding in order to subsidize tax cuts for the wealthy. So let me set this up, give you a little more context, then I'll give you some specific examples of what various states are doing. So the American Rescue Plan, passed in March, delivered nearly $200 billion in aid to states with a number of stipulations about how the funds could be used, including a provision designed to prevent states from using the money to cut taxes. Now, the problem here is that they draft the bill, they're about to vote on it, and then the Democrats realize, oh wait, we gotta do something about the fact that Republican lawmakers on a state level might want to take the stimulus money and subsidize tax cuts for the rich. So let's put something in here, a provision, if you will, that prevents that from happening. A last minute provision added to the American Rescue Plan by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was intended to prevent states from using the influx of federal aid to subsidize these types of tax cuts. But the interim rule published by the Treasury Department to enforce this provision seems to have been written broadly enough that even billions of dollars of regressive tax cuts fall within the rules. And so what's happening now? Well, let's take a look at the state of Arizona, where its legislature recently passed a $1.9 billion income tax cut designed to benefit the wealthy, with a whopping 93% of the benefits going to the top 20% of earners and over half going to the top 1%. I want to stop for a second and just really think about the broader picture here and the messaging that we've heard from right-wing lawmakers regarding unemployment benefits. Remember, there are dozens of red states that prematurely cut unemployment benefits in order to make Americans so desperate that they'll take any job, regardless of the pay, regardless of the possible vulnerabilities these workers might have to coronavirus, regardless of any type of immune issue. Doesn't matter. Let's cut them off early because we want to force them to go back to work, you know? We can't have Americans sit around and collect unemployment checks when there's a labor shortage. But in the meantime, you have red states like Arizona, essentially cutting the income tax, which overwhelmingly benefits the wealthy. Ohio is also one of these states. They passed a $1.7 billion in tax cuts, over half of which will flow to the top 5% of earners, and over a third of which will flow to the top 1%. And Wisconsin passed more than $2 billion in tax cuts, about three quarters of which will go to individuals who make $100,000 or more. I mean, it's just, this is it, this is the system. We're constantly redistributing wealth from the bottom to the top, and this is yet another example of that.
Yeah, this is actually almost a perfect example, because Biden comes in with big fanfare saying we're going to get COVID relief checks to the average American. Now, to be fair, is there a difference between the Republicans and Democrats? Yes, they did actually get bigger checks to the actual average Americans, whereas the Republicans in the beginning of COVID relief gave trillions of dollars mainly to giant corporations, then to small business, and then a small amount to average Americans. Okay, so there was a difference, that's true, right? But then Trump has this, well, Biden loves to carry forward Trump's policies, but in this case, he's actually just doing the Republican governor's bidding. So Biden says, no, this is for the average Americans. You're not allowed to use it for tax cuts for the rich at the state level. Then the governors come in, they're Republicans, and go, well, and the state legislatures, and they go, no. We want to give things to the rich, no matter what. You said average Americans, I don't care. I just want to take it, and instead of giving it to them, I want to give it to the rich, right? And then another classic move in American politics, the Democrats then bow their head, probably on purpose, and go, oh, okay, fine. I guess there was nothing we could do. Give it to the rich, right? Well, actually, there's everything you can do. You could just say, no, we're going to enforce the law, and you're not allowed to give it to the rich. You said that you would, every one of these states signed a document saying, we accept your rules as is, and we are not allowed to cut taxes if we meet certain metrics, right? And so here they are, and they go, we don't care. I just want to cut tax for the rich immediately. And Biden goes, I was hoping you'd ask, right?
Well, I mean, Ohio literally went to the courts to whine and complain about the broad rule that was implemented in the stimulus package. And I'm wondering, Adrian, as someone who's, you know, trained as a lawyer, what are your thoughts on that? You know, I mean, it's just, it's incredible how much these stimulus bills were abused by the very top, not just this stimulus bill, but the previous stimulus bills as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The abuse of the system. And the thing is that, as you all know, we have a system that is built to favor the wealthy. So even if it is completely legally okay and sound for the system to continue, people will exploit it so that they can continue to make money. And as we saw during the pandemic, with the wealthy gaining 54% more in wealth, going from what, about $8.4 trillion to just over $12 trillion, the system is set up to operate in a way that it continues to maintain the class divide. And the legal system has become an arm of that, as it unfortunately always was intended to be.
I want to build off that because that's such a great point. So they're not doing something that is against this current, what I would consider corrupt system, right? They're following along in that system. Mm-hmm. So we've told you many times on the show, they legalized bribery through campaign contributions and independent expenditures. They legalized loan sharks, payday lenders. They legalized heroin dealers, that's Oxy. So they're just taking ways that you basically rob the American people, that the mob used to literally do and gangs used to do. And they put people in suits and they make it legal and they go forward. So here, the money was supposed to go to you, the average American. Well, again, Republicans decided that they were going to rob you and the Democrats were going to let them rob you. But it's okay, they're in suits, they have very good ties. And they switch, they have red ties, they have blue ties. And then so when the rich rob you of the money you were supposed to have, the system says, oh, that's A-okay, that's fantastic, right? And then another point that Adrian made is really good, and I want to also emphasize that one. Remember, the whole point of this relief package was relief. A lot of you got fired during obviously the COVID pandemic situation, right? And a lot of the small businesses got shut down. There's a lot of people that were desperately affected. The states need money for all these different programs for the affected people. And this is the state saying, no, we're not going to give it to the affected people. Remember, as Adrian pointed out, the rich actually increased their wealth during COVID, significantly so. We're gonna give it to people who actually did great during this crisis and don't need any relief at all, but we don't give a damn because they're our donors and the Republican Party here is here to serve the rich and the Democrats are here to do likewise while pretending that there was nothing they could do.
In fact, just real quick, I want to give you more details on that lawsuit that was filed by Ohio because it's just so incredibly egregious and shows you where their priorities are, which is of course that redistribution of wealth from the bottom to the top. So the case brought by Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost and backed by the US Chamber of Commerce, of course, and National Federation of Independent Businesses argued that the federal government was unconstitutionally coercing Ohio into accepting its tax policies. The tax policy is, hey, don't take this stimulus money that's meant to help your state in order to subsidize tax cuts for the rich. That's what they were complaining about. And unfortunately, the judge appears to have ruled in Ohio's favor. In fact, Republicans have been fighting the tax cut provision of the American Rescue Package or plan since the moment it passed. Senator Mike Braun of Indiana introduced the Let States Cut Taxes Act to repeal the provision. And here's his statement. He said, quote, not only did the blue state bailout bill penalize states for reopening by calculating state funds based on unemployment, now they're trying to use it as a backdoor to ban states from cutting taxes. My bill would make sure that they don't get away with it. No, in other words, no, we forced the people of our state to go back to work under unsafe conditions. We prematurely cut their benefits, the unemployment benefits, and we took the money, I mean, we took the stimulus money. Who the hell is the federal government to tell us what we can and can't do with that federal money? No, I mean, it's disgusting. It's just absolutely disgusting.
And of course, that was the Republicans' first priority. I'm gonna reiterate one last thing here because it's so important. The percentages, because if you're not in news or you're not in politics, you don't know the percentages, right? And there's no reason why you would. But the politicians know the percentages, and that's why they do what they do. And that's why Mike Brown and everybody jumped in immediately. The Republicans, no, we gotta do tax cuts. Why? Remember the numbers about Arizona. 93% of those tax cuts are gonna go to the top 20%. The bottom 80% needed the relief. They're gonna get 7% of the tax cuts. And of the giant tax cuts in the case of Arizona is about $2 billion, 50%. So about $1 billion is going to go to the top 1% of the wealthy in Arizona. Top 1% are going to get $1 billion in so-called relief that they clearly, obviously do not need. Brought to you by the Republican Party and as usual, the Democratic Party surrender.
All right, well, let's move on to our next story. And this one's a doozy. I have a lot of thoughts on it, and I'm sure you guys will too. So, comedian Bill Burr was venting, if you will, about the news coverage on CNN during his own podcast Monday morning. And he specifically wanted to address the fact that they keep talking about Donald Trump. He thinks that's problematic. Let's hear why.
You know, my mother-in-law comes over to help watch the kids, and she always puts on CNN. And do you know what those f-ing morons are doing? Do you know what those f-ing morons are doing? They're f-ing talking about Trump. I swear to God, I cannot believe people watch that channel. They're so dumb. It's like, do you think these people give a f-ing? They want Darth Vader to come back. They want him to come back because they got nothing to talk about because it's show business and Joe Biden is a bore. They can't bitch about him because he's wearing a blue tie. So now what do? They're going out there, they're doing what they did the first time to get this guy elected by giving him all this free coverage while they act like they allegedly don't like him. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. They're a corporate news channel. And they're treasonous, un-American pieces of just like Fox News, MSNBC, just like all of them.
All right. So obviously his focus seems to be CNN. But for the purposes of this conversation, I think we should talk about media on just a broader level, because I don't think that this is really inherent at CNN. I think you see this all over the place. And I don't agree with some of the hyperbole at the end with like they're treasonous. I'm guessing he was joking around there. But I do think there's a lot of truth in what he's saying regarding the excessive Trump coverage. But at the same time, I think that it would be wrong to believe that Trump isn't still the leader of the Republican Party. He still has an insane amount of influence and sway over them. But I do also agree that giving him a lot of coverage gives him what he wants, right? He wants to remain in the news. He wants to be at the top of mind among Republican voters.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting question. And in a minute, I'm gonna give you statistics to back up what Bill Burr is saying. So I think it's we struggle with it every day. Let me put it that way. Do you do a Trump story or don't you do a Trump story? The guy is super relevant because he's clearly the leader of the Republican Party. He will easily win the Republican nomination if he runs, if it was held today. And he's not just a menace to society and to the country, but to our democracy. I fully believe that he's a fascist. And so in a way you gotta knock him down, but he's like that creature in the original Star Trek where if you fire your phasers at him, he only grows stronger with that negative energy. And so that's why you can agree or disagree with Bill Burr on whether to cover him, but the essence of what he's saying is definitely correct.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he is getting, and he continues to get larger and larger. I think we've got a poll on it, tyt.com/polls. We'd love to hear what you think. I'm gonna give you the stats to back up Bill Burr and the quotes in a second. But Adrian, what do you think? What do you do with Trump in a situation like this?
No, I definitely think Burr's comments seem to be very on point, because the reality is that cable news experienced unprecedented ratings during those 4 years of absolute chaos where the American public couldn't avoid the news cycle, and it didn't want to step away because you never knew where the next fire would pop up. And so that's how Trump got so many of us hooked. And of course, you know, mainstream media love the ratings, and so they're willing to sacrifice our sense of peace by essentially keeping Trump relevant in the news cycle, which I think is why Fox News continues to stay on top, because they're creating all the havoc that keeps people attached and locked in. And CNN wants a little bit of that, you know, a piece of that pie too.
Yeah, well, the Fox News part is indisputable. They are giving him positive coverage, and they're spreading his insane conspiracy theories about how the Capitol riots weren't Trump's fault, they were Biden's fault, they were the FBI's fault, etc. And he actually won some of them, at least intimated and inferred that he had won the election. So all of that, what that Fox News is doing is dangerous, and that's obvious, right? Mm-hmm. The question is the CNNs and the MSNBCs, and honestly us, we got a Trump story later in the show, because the generals were concerned that he was going to plan a coup.
Yeah.
Now, is that relevant for you to know if we're going to go to another election with Trump? It is super relevant, right? And then this is when the news is breaking. On the other hand, when you fire at the guy, he gets stronger. So it's an unsolvable riddle. So let me give you now the quotes and stuff. Anna, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to say, I don't think that the CNNs of the world are really that interested in calculating how their coverage of Trump is going to have an impact on an upcoming election or anything like that. I think Adrian like hit the nail on the head, and so did Bill Burr in mentioning the real motivation there. And the motivation is ratings. Like, let's keep it real, guys. Every once in a while when we do a story, and I try to keep Trump stories at a minimum, because it's not even about like, ooh, it's so chaotic and I want to cover it. No, I'm bored. I'm bored of Trump stories. I'm tired of them and I kind of hate them. But the thing is, at the same time, it's like, just take a look at how any story involving Biden does versus any story involving Trump, right? Trump stories blow up, right? And so if you want to survive as a news organization, like you have to make those decisions, and it sucks. The way that news is funded sucks. And I think that that's the main driver in the stuff that ends up getting covered.
So look, both online media and traditional media get seduced by that. And they will, and almost every one of them would. Now, if they had impeached and convicted him last time, and part of that conviction was he's never allowed to run for office again, I swear to God, I'd cut every Trump story. I'd be like, he's irrelevant, let's move on with our lives, okay? And remember, we're the guys who originally tried to ban him. Remember, we wouldn't cover Trump, and then we blurred his face. This was back in 2015, etc. And then it didn't work. And so we had to go to covering him because the CNNs of the world were kissing his ass. And we're like, no, wait a minute, the guy's a monster. And remember, now CNN attacks him. But when he was running for president in 2016, they show empty podiums, Trump's about to speak.
Right.
I mean, CNN was the biggest fans of Donald Trump. In fact, I have evidence of that. So let's, now first, it's all about mainstream media. I'm gonna give you a quote from Leslie Moonves. He used to be the former head of CBS. And he said about this Trump phenomenon, it may not be good for America, but it's damn good for CBS. I've never seen anything like this, and this is going to be a very good year for us. Sorry, it's a terrible thing to say, but bring it on, Donald. Keep going, the money's rolling in,
exactly.
And this is fun.
That's what it's about. It's about the money, it's about the ratings, and bring back the fairness doctrine. Anyway, and expand it from what it was before.
I don't agree with that, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, so, but now let me give you stats. Trump received 78% of all coverage on CNN between August 24th and September 4th of 2015. Okay, so that's the height of the talk of the race in 2016. They have not started voting yet. Okay, but this is when people are beginning to formulate their ideas about who they're gonna vote for. The debates have begun. There's 17 people in the race on the Republican side alone, 17 people. But he receives 78% of all the coverage on CNN. Okay, not Fox News, CNN. Then now let's continue. He also dominated evening network news coverage in the first half of 2015, despite announcing his candidacy late in this period. By November of 2015, Trump had received more evening network news coverage, 234 minutes, than the entire Democratic field. By contrast, Ted Cruz had received 7 minutes. Jeez. 234 to 7.
I don't blame them for the Ted Cruz coverage.
Right.
That was the right way.
Yeah, for real.
Okay, yeah, and by the way, if you wanted to give Ted Cruz 7 minutes and Donald Trump 9 minutes, no one cares,
right.
God bless, right? But 234 to seven is, you might as well just hand election to Donald Trump. I've told you the guys this in many contexts, media is almost everything in elections because when you go in to vote, there's only a name and your brand is everything, right? And so CNN, and remember CNN was run by Jeff Zucker. And Jeff Zucker used to run NBC when they greenlit and produced The Apprentice starring Donald Trump. And remember that Zucker knew that Donald Trump had had 6 bankruptcies and was a complete and utter loser. He built a mirage of a really successful businessman for the purposes of good ratings for that NBC reality show, full well knowing that he was not only pumping up a guy who was a total failure in business, but was also a grotesque human being. Everyone who knew Trump at the time would say, oh, he's terrible, including Tucker Carlson. That's another story that's in the news today. Everybody knew he was a terrible guy. So Jeff Zucker says, yeah, I don't care. I want the money, okay? Mm-hmm. I want the money at NBC. I want the money at CNN. Moonves at CBS goes, I love money too. Let's all pump Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And guess what? When you only talk about Donald Trump, of course Donald Trump gets elected. One last thing, Bernie Sanders, I don't have those stats in front of me, but we covered it before. In 2016, when Joe Biden was not running for president, in the lead up to that election in 2015, Joe Biden got more news coverage than Bernie Sanders did, as Bernie Sanders was closing a 50-point lead on Hillary Clinton. It was one of the most remarkable political stories of our lifetimes. And they refused to cover Bernie Sanders almost under penalty of law. Okay, so when you have a monster like Donald Trump sucking up all of the airtime, and they won't even talk about Bernie Sanders, gee, I wonder why 2016 turned out the way that it did. Because if you talk about Bernie, he talks about how corporations are screwing us. What are these entities making these decisions? Giant multinational corporations, okay? And so they don't want the anti-corporate message of Bernie Sanders. Donald Trump is a con man, and he'll give people whatever they want as long as you play ball with him. So they think Donald Trump's good for ratings, mm-hmm. and he'll give corporations tax cuts and everything, which he did. So they promote him, they bury Bernie Sanders. Back to Bill Burr, the second thing, I don't want you to lose track of this. Not only is he right about the cable news coverage, especially in the 2016 election, but his vitriol towards mainstream media is even more correct. Because for their own agenda, they're brainwashing you. So we talk about the cult of Trump, and that definitely exists, right? But the original cult is mainstream media telling you corporate rule is awesome. The status quo is wonderful, and you should trust the establishment and all these corporate politicians. And so when you got brave comics like Bill Burr saying, no, don't believe the hype. Obviously, it reminds me of George Carlin, and they're both right. And that's why The Daily Show did so well, because you need the comedians to tell you, because the news people are fake. I mean, it's in a lot of ways, it's true. They're either fake towards corporate rule or they're fake towards Donald Trump and his personal corruption. So everybody, tyt.com/polls. It is super interesting whether you continue to cover the atrocities of Donald Trump going forward or you try not to. And remember, if we stop, it doesn't mean CNN is gonna stop. And so that's why it's even more complicated.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, how do you like rebut the lies coming from right-wing media? Because they're gonna continue doing their thing. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I will say, just on a very personal level, I know not everyone agrees with this, Trump stories are super boring. That coup story from yesterday, like I didn't wanna do it. But Cenk finds it interesting. He has stuff to say about it. For me, it's like, oh, a bunch of generals decided to stay quiet during the Trump administration. And now they're trying to sell a bunch of books and they're saying that they were worried about another coup. Anyway, but we got that story coming up in the second hour where you'll get more details on it. For now, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, there's a breaking news story involving DACA that I'd like to cover.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Anna, and Adrian with you guys. Lots of stories to get to, so let's just do it. Anna, what's up?
All right, well, there's a breaking news story that I'd like to cover. And unfortunately, it's bad news involving DACA. So, breaking news story, a federal judge out of Texas has ruled that DACA, the program that essentially allows immigrants who have been brought into the country illegally as children and remain undocumented, needs to end. He considers it illegal. And as a result, he will ban any new applications for potential DACA recipients. Now, as this ruling stands right now, it appears that the current DACA recipients will be allowed to remain, meaning that their permits to be in the United States will not be revoked. But who knows what the future entails in regard to this program. I do want to give you the reasoning from this judge, and his name is Judge Andrew Hannon. He was appointed by President George W. Bush, and he ruled that Congress had not granted the Department of Homeland Security the authority to create DACA, and that it prevented immigration officials from enforcing removal provisions of the Immigration and Nationality Act. In fact, in his decision, he wrote, quote, Congress has not granted the executive branch free rein to grant lawful presence outside the ambit of the statutory scheme. And he essentially says that Congress remains the only body that would provide a permanent solution for these dreamers, right? Again, these are undocumented immigrants who were brought into the United States as children, and DACA was really the only program that kind of protected them from getting deported. It was passed through an executive order by the Obama administration. Trump then comes in and tries to end the program, but the Supreme Court blocked him from deporting DACA recipients. And so now we have this situation going through the federal courts with a federal judge in Texas ruling that the program or the protection for dreamers is illegal.
We have a totally broken system, Adrian. I mean, we were supposed to protect these dreamers decades ago. We were supposed to pass a law so you didn't have to go through executive orders, et cetera. And in the beginning, the Republicans said, oh yeah, yeah, oh, we love Latinos. And yeah, of course, no problem, right? And then when it came to vote, they were like, oh no, we hate them. We were just kidding. That was just for elections. Of course, we vote no, and we'll never let you pass it. And then, you know, you elect Trump. Of course, he's not going to do it. He's going to do the opposite. He called all immigrants coming in from the southern border criminals and rapists. He says, I suppose there's some good ones. Wow, are you not merciful, right? So it looks like we can't do the simplest things, like just this basic human decency that, by the way, an overwhelming majority of the country agrees with. I've seen polling near 80% on this issue. But what do we do? What do we live in a democracy? So Adrian, as usual, the bad guys come out on top.
Yes, they do, unfortunately. And it does seem that, you know, in creation of DACA, that the Obama administration was really trying to do something significant and also impactful that would just be good for the nation. And then having Biden also try to bolster that when he came into office. But the reality is, if in the event that this judge's ruling is accurate and Congress did not create that kind of wide authority of powers for the executive branch to go ahead and go through with it, then it will lie with Congress. And you know what? We've seen so much in terms of getting things through Congress that actually help and benefit the people. And so I don't know necessarily if they can help bolster DACA, but at the end of the day, in the event that Congress doesn't do something, it's going to end up before the Supreme Court again. And I can't guarantee that it would survive another challenge, especially given that conservative swing that it really seems the court is leaning in that direction without fail, no exceptions.
You know, to be honest, I have no idea how this right-wing Supreme Court would rule on this, because there's kind of something happening that threatens the economy that conservatives are panicking about. And that's the fact that for the first time in 2020, the US population actually went down, right? Of course, because of coronavirus, but also because people aren't having children, because why would you in this country that provides no social safety net and really gives you no incentives to have children? There's nothing to support people who want to have kids. So the birth rate is down. The population is actually declining in the United States. And from what I've been hearing from various conservative lawmakers and also on conservative podcasts, which yes, I do unfortunately force myself to listen to them. They're panicking about it, you know, and they're like, what are we going to do? We need, if you have an aging population, it's going to hurt the economy. So there's that part of it. I don't know if that's going to factor into the Supreme Court's decision. However, I do want to bring something up in regard to this federal judge's decision, because I don't disagree with the reasoning here. But we have a system of government now that's so incredibly broken, right? Congress is supposed to pass legislation to protect DACA recipients. There should not be this unlimited amount of power in the executive branch where all these decisions get made by a stroke of the pen by the president of the United States. I think that's wrong. We're supposed to have a system of checks and balances. But Congress is useless. Congress is divided, it's useless. It's completely bought off by corporate interests. And so they don't ever do anything that's actually useful in the form of passing legislation to provide protections for people, including DACA recipients. So we end up in this awful situation where now the courts are striking down these executive orders that are important. It's really our last resort. But again, the reasoning or the rationale in this ruling is sound, in my opinion, right? But the problem is we have a broken system with an awful Congress that's never gonna do anything that's right in terms of immigration.
So lastly, let me just agree with both Adrian and Anna. So I think Adrian's legal analysis is correct. So if you can't do it this way, then you should do it regular order, which is in America, you're supposed to pass laws,
right?
And so pass the goddamn law. And to agreeing with Anna, well, Democrats, I mean, Congress is useless overall, right? But Democrats, you now have control over all of the branches of government except the Supreme Court. So you got the presidency, you got the House and the Senate. If you don't pass any of these easy laws, these are bare minimum promises, protect the dreamers, $15 minimum wage, For the People Act, where you protect voting rights, and the infrastructure bill that you promised, right? If you don't pass these bare minimum, we're not talking about, you know, Medicare for all, we're not talking about other things that you promised as part of Biden's agenda. We're talking about just the easiest ones. If you don't pass one of those, let alone all of those, yeah, then the voters are going to correctly conclude that you are useless. Mm-hmm. And they're going to incorrectly try the Republicans again. And the Republicans don't want any of those things passed, and they support unpopular positions. But the voter, you put the voters in an impossible spot where they go, well, if I vote for you again, I know I'm gonna get nothing. So what's the point?
Right.
So Democrats either do something or give up as a party, let progressives take over, which would be infinitely better, because we're ready to do a lot of things on behalf of the American people.
All right, well, let's take our second break. When we come back, we have more news for you, including a follow-up on an MIT study that was done in the 1970s that predicted societal collapse by 2040. Researcher at Harvard followed up on that and found out, well, you're gonna have to come back and I'll tell you.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk, Anna and Adrian with you guys. Tons of news, Casper, let's roll.
Well, what are the consequences of constant economic growth? If you have an economic system like capitalism that assumes that year after year, you need to see more and more and more growth. Well, back in the 1970s, researchers over at MIT looked into this and they found that if we keep going the pace that we're going in, by 2040, society will collapse. And guess what? A Harvard researcher decided to follow up on these findings, and she found that we're actually on pace, meaning that these MIT researchers were absolutely right. So let me give you these details, just to give you a little more context or more details about the study itself that was done by MIT. In 1972, a team of MIT scientists got together to study the risks of civilizational collapse. Their system dynamics model, published by the Club of Rome, identified impending limits to growth that meant industrial civilization was on track to collapse sometime within the 21st century due to, this is important, overexploitation of planetary resources. Let's say it again, overexploitation of planetary resources. Now, we're experiencing the ramifications of climate change as we speak, but let me give you the details on the analysis that was done later by a Harvard researcher. So the current business as usual trajectory of global civilization is heading toward the terminal decline of economic growth within the coming decade, and at worst could trigger societal collapse by around 2040. So the Harvard researcher that we're talking about here, her name is Gaia Harrington, and her new analysis examines data across 10 key variables, namely population, fertility rates, mortality rates, industrial output, food production services, non-renewable resources, persistent pollution, human welfare, and ecological footprint. She found that the latest data most closely aligns with two particular scenarios, business as usual and comprehensive technology. So business as usual is what we keep hearing about in regard to COVID ending and everything going back to normal. But what are the consequences of that? Can we actually just go back to normal? Based on these findings, no, there are some severe consequences to that. So business as usual and comprehensive technology scenarios show a halt in growth within a decade or so from now. Both scenarios thus indicate that continuing business as usual, that is pursuing continuous growth, is not possible. Even when paired with unprecedented technological development and adoption, business as usual, as modeled by limits to growth, would inevitably lead to declines in industrial capital, agricultural output, and welfare levels within this century. So I've got more details about this, but Cenk, I wanted to get your thoughts.
Yeah, so I'll say two things before handing it off to Adrian. So look, that there's, she's saying there that they were right in 1972, but there's a separate story in the news today about the Amazon, and they're saying, no, we were wrong, it's happening quicker than we realized. And so some of the things that we thought were gonna happen way later have already happened. So for example, in some of the affected regions in the Amazon, temperature has gone up in the last 40 years by 4.5 degrees. We are absolutely screwed. 4.5 degrees in a weather pattern is no big deal. Okay, it's 74 degrees, it's 78.5 degrees. That's not important, right? But when the entire region is lifted by 4.5 degrees on average, then that is epic disaster. And so we're deforesting the Amazon, that puts less water in the air. I can go on and on. But we've created a vicious cycle we cannot get past. In fact, some of the scientists in that story say, we're not at the tipping point, we're past the tipping point.
Yeah, exactly.
So when they look back at us in the future, they're gonna say, why didn't you do something? And in fact, they'll look at videos like this and say, you see, they knew. They knew. They'll look at the story about the Amazon. They'll say they knew. They'll look at that story and go, my God, they knew in 1972. And then it was reaffirmed in 2021 that the scientists were exactly right, right? And yet they still did nothing.
Yeah.
It's always wild to me how the scientists, researchers, they always have the answer. They always know how to fix things. Yet mainstream doesn't listen to them because it's not beneficial economically. And in this situation, it's exactly what we're seeing play out, where they let us know in advance that, hey, it's not gonna go well for us. We're heading toward Mad Max Thunderdome Part 2, you know, but the reality is that people won't listen. No, because we have to generate money. And I love also that this MIT report came out pre-Amazon, in terms of Jeff Bezos, because the fact is that even when I see how that business model operates and all the boxes I have stacked up in my home and thinking of that in everyone else's home and just thinking of how much we waste and use, it's clear we're not going to make it for very long. And if not, you know, we need to be ready to fight in the Thunderdome.
Right. I mean, the idea of infinite growth is, we really like think about it, insane, right? It's insane, especially when that growth relies on exploiting the planet and its natural resources. Those resources are finite. And so when you think about the impact on agriculture, for instance, which is one of the variables that was looked at in this follow-up study, it all makes sense. I mean, it uses all this fancy lingo, but in reality, this is a very simple concept, and we're seeing the ramifications of this system we're seeing it in extreme weather conditions. We're seeing it in, infrastructure not being able to withstand the conditions that we're dealing with. So I also want to talk a little bit about like the timeline, right? Because it's not like we get to 2040 and the world ends. No, that's not what the researchers are saying here. So Harrington found in the MIT World 3 models, collapse does not mean that humanity will cease to exist, but rather that economic and industrial growth will stop and then decline, which will hurt food production and standards of living. In terms of timing, the business as usual scenario shows a steep decline to set in around 2040. But to be honest with you, I feel like we're already experiencing that steep decline. But it's not the end of the world, right? Like, so this doesn't mean, oh my God, the situation is so dire that at this point we can do absolutely nothing about it. She mentions how technological advancements could actually help us in mitigating some of the consequences we're experiencing, but also in creating a more sustainable model, right? But I mean, we can't. That would require like worldwide global cooperation, something that's kind of difficult to do when the United States is still, wanting to dominate and uses all sorts of hawkish rhetoric when it comes to China, when it comes to Russia, when it comes to other major countries that, whether you love them or not, you need to cooperate with them in order to combat climate change and the decline that we're talking about here.
Yeah. So I think, again, when people look back, they're gonna say, wait, to Adrian's point, why didn't they listen to the scientists? That's weird. 99% of the scientists told them that climate change was definitely happening. What did you need, 100%? Did they think that the scientists in India and Brazil and US and Philippines were all lying about temperature recordings? It's insane, right? But then they're gonna see, oh, they didn't even listen to the scientists when there was a pandemic. And the scientists said, wear the mask, get the vaccine. People are like, no, I prefer to die. They're really going to be confounded by how stupid we are in present day America and in a lot of other parts of the world, to be honest, when it comes to climate change. Some countries are doing amazing work trying to fix the problem, and a lot of countries are not. And then to another point by Adrian, the greed is unstoppable. That's why I talk about how the stock market is basically a greed machine. It demands 15% growth from each company every year. Well, you can't do that, right, Adrian's right, Anna's right. You can't have infinite growth. That doesn't make any sense. You obviously set yourself up for some sort of collapse at some point, right? And then look, the only hope that I have, and it's a weird kind of hope, other than progressives taking over in America and actually doing things that are sane, is we have declining birth rates, both in America and all across the world. So nature is going to find a way to begin to fix it. And one of the ways is, all right, you guys are not going to have kids anymore. And so part of that is because of the pollution that we're putting out there, plastic pollution and other factors. So we're kind of poisoning ourselves along with the planet. And so then you might get to equilibrium because we hurt our ability to reproduce so much that, well, we consume less resources because there's less of us. Mm-hmm. But that's not an ideal solution. So we should get to that point naturally, not through pollution and climate change. And then my last point is Adrian's cat obviously won this video, but.
Oh, I don't have a cat. You can see him. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I saw him earlier. He was enjoying the story. He was like, "Oh, wait, what's going on with climate change?"
All right.
Good old Maverick.
And he was, in fact, a Maverick.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's get to our final story of the hour, secession, because that's a topic of discussion among right wingers. So. A new YouGov and Brightline Watch poll finds that there are huge portions of this country that are looking to secede. It goes to show you just how divided the country really is. But let's give you those details because it's not just right wingers. Some of these West Coast Democrats also would like to secede. And I want to give you the details. So if you take a look at this graphic, it shows you the various areas in question here. So you've got the Pacific with California, Washington, Oregon, Hawaii, and Alaska. You've got the South with the southern states, the Heartland. You guys get that point. Now, here's what the study found. A 66% majority of Republicans in 13 of these southern states, including Texas and Florida, are in favor of seceding from the Union. 66%. Obviously, that's more than half. So half of all independents in the South also agreed with them, with only 20% of Southern Democrats on board.
Well, by the way, 20% is not that small a number. I mean, that's a fifth of Democrats going, yeah, we should secede. And so here we are again. I mean, that's the Confederacy. Those are the folks who did secede earlier. And now apparently a majority of them overall want to secede again. And obviously led by conservatives like they were last time. Conservatives were the ones who said, no, we want to be able to keep slaves. We think that's a property right. And this North is impeding upon our freedoms and our states' rights to own human beings and whip them and kill them and take away their babies and sell them to other people. And we want to be able to do all that stuff. And so that was back in the day. And now here we are again with the Confederacy going, I'm here for it. Let's separate. Now, look, we'll talk about whether that's a disastrous idea, which of course it is, except Fox News now is beginning to say, maybe, right? But let's be fair. There's a lot of Democrats in the Pacific states who are like seceding from the rest of this country, where it's just, I mean, look at that Pacific region, right? You got the West Coast, California, Washington, Oregon, and then you add Hawaii and Alaska, which are lovely. We're going to outvote Alaska big time, right? The rest of them are massively Democratic. And that would be an incredibly wealthy, incredibly beautiful country. Right? So am I in favor of it? And incredibly progressive. Well, first of all, in politics, you don't fix anything if you don't get the money out of politics. That new country, if it had the same corruption as the current America, well, it would devolve anyway. It doesn't matter if Democrats are in charge, right? They're also corrupt. I mean, you're seeing it happen in California. But do I want it even in the ideal scenario? Of course not. I love America. We got to stay together because what are we going to do? We're just going to tear each other apart. And then California is going to secede. And then San Francisco is going to secede. This is insanity. So that's my take, Adrian.
So as a native Californian, I've always thought of how cool it would be to secede the union. But then again, I was just being cute because the reality is that the rest of the nation needs us. We kind of started this together. We should probably finish it together. And if we don't, then I could see a lot of oppression going on in the South and in a lot of states. Once again, as we're seeing people or we're seeing states pass laws and that really look to restrict voting, curb your right to your body, all sorts of things that are very oppressive and would arguably be a newer form of slavery. And if we are going to be that voice that keeps them from going down that path, then we've got to be able to do it. It's just a matter of it is difficult sitting here in California and being associated with a whole different mentality of a lot of different states that you think, you know what, I'd prefer not to be a part of it. But again, we started it together and we should end it together.
Yeah, my take on this poll is that it's dumb. It's a dumb poll. And the reason why I say that is because, look, I get it. I mean, the country is unfortunately incredibly divided. And when a pollster hits you up and is like, yo, would you like to secede? I can see a lot of Americans saying yes from a very emotional place. But let's stop and think about what secession means. Okay, so does this new coalition of southern states, which becomes its own country, practice full-blown federalism without any type of central government? What happens to all of those people living in those states who rely on whatever we have left of a social safety net, which is overwhelmingly funded by people living in California and New York and all of that? Like, you know, the high income earners that live in the coast that they love to hate on, and I get it, like some of those elites are worth hating on, but their taxes end up funding the social safety net that many of their, you know, constituents rely on. So like, I think if people just stop and actually think about it, they might have a different opinion on whether or not secession makes sense. But if you're just coming from a super emotional place and you're basing your answer or your decision on how divided the country is or how much you hate the other side, then yeah, the percentage is gonna be high. 66% is gonna happen.
Yeah, my favorite part of the story now became when Anna says, the pollster calls you and says, yo, you wanna secede? I don't know a lot of pollsters that talk.
Hey, what do you think about seceding? You wanna secede? You wanna, you know, you wanna do your own country?
Hey, you wanna get out of here? What do you want? Come on, let's go, right? So I'm not quite sure that's how they phrase it. But but look, of course, Anna's right that if the South secedes, they're in a world of hurt. I mean, they are among the poorer states in the country. And but of course they don't know that. They think the Republicans in Mississippi and Alabama think, we got this stuff on lockdown, man. We got to figure it out. No, you guys are at the very bottom of every single ranking. But they don't, in their minds, they're like, ha, we figured this out. San Francisco, I didn't make any money there. Next thing you're gonna tell me is that they're making money in New York. No, of course, we're the Republicans. We know what we're doing. We're at the top, aren't we? No, you're at the very, very bottom. So there's a little bit of schadenfreude in like, go ahead, secede, see how it turns out for you, right? But at the end of the day,
unrealistic.
Like the best point was Adrian's, which is, what are we gonna leave people behind in the South? We're gonna leave black people behind in the South? We're gonna leave poor people behind in the South? Hell no, there's no way we're gonna do that. We're gonna keep them inside America and we're gonna try to protect them and we're gonna fight for them. Now Fox is a completely different opinion, so let's show you this clip of them reacting to the same poll.
I am very pro splitting the country as a trial separation. Why not try it for 2 years, red and blue? Okay. Let the Democrats do their Democrat thing and the Republicans do the Republican thing and see what happens.
You know, I'm probably gonna get myself in trouble for this, but like, would it be the worst thing? I mean, I don't know. I'm sick and tired of people who hate this country. I'm sick and tired of saying the flag is some sort of the sign of evilness or oppression, who despise the country that we live in. I'm tired of a government now who, you know, people like Biden want to weaponize the government against people who supported Trump. So, I mean, I don't know, like, would it be the worst thing?
This is all about, we have to get over the sunk cost of our history. It's like, hey, it was a good run. Like if you're in a loveless marriage for 200 years, and you gotta get out of it.
I have a bigger problem with the states that act like they already have seceded.
Nicely put.
That don't care about flyover country, don't right. care about rural America, don't care. And I'm speaking sometimes to myself, because I live in Newport Beach, California, and in Manhattan.
What was that last point? Are you kidding me right now? I mean, Republican, like red states are constantly screaming like states' rights at the top of their lungs anytime there's any effort in like central government, like federal government, like COVID is a perfect example of that. Anyway, whatever.
And of course, the blue states financed the red states. So what do you mean we left the flyover country behind? No, we didn't. We constantly finance you guys. And so, and then, but I guess Gutfeld was joking. I never can tell if he's joking because he's not funny about let's separate for 2-3 years and find out if it works. It's not really how it works. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say he was joking. But the other host, Lisa Booth, was not joking. And she was saying that she's sick of people criticizing this country. So that's why they should secede from America. You get that we would be America and you would be betraying us and seceding from the United States of America. No, they don't get it. They're amazing. They're like, oh yeah, man, I'm tired of people beating up America. So let's rip it apart and leave it and maybe fight a war against it. America. What? Okay, and I promise you the numbers, so I'll just give it to you. Yes, 47% of Democrats in the Pacific region also said secession, maybe not such a bad idea, right? And that's also wrong. But the biggest numbers were in the South of Republicans saying, let's get out of here. And they've tried it before, and guess what? It didn't work. All right, we gotta go. We're massively over time. Adrian, you're awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Maverick, you as well. We appreciate the cameo. Okay, Casper, it's a treat on a Friday. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We got an amazing hour coming up for you guys. Turns out Tucker Carlson's always hated Donald Trump. That's a fun story. And then, my God, if you're a member, today's an amazing day for you guys because they've now started arresting people for looking at cops the wrong way in Utah. I'm not kidding, it's a real story. That's gonna be in the bonus episode, tyt.com/join to become a member and get those stories. All right, we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members only bonus content and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.